Horses Mouths Advisor Radio. This is our Advisor Talking Points segment, where we help prepare you for client interactions about the pressing topics in the markets and the economy. Today is Thursday, November 16th, 2017. I'm Doug Pierce, Associate Editor at Horses Mouth, and I'm joined by Charles Sherry, author of our Advisor Talking Points column. Now, this week's Talking Points takes a look under the hood of the current bull market. But before we actually get into the talking points themselves, Charles, we're in a bull market. Advisors are constantly, facing their clients' expectations and questions. Do you have any advice for what advisors should be telling their clients right now?
Sure, Doug, and thank you. And it's great to be back today. I do. And right now, with markets at highs, I think it can produce a couple of different feelings. One of euphoria and invincibility can also, when you hit new highs, create a lot of this cautious mood. Is this the top, or is this the top? And when you're having these conversations with clients, and they're asking, what's going on right here? Is this a bubble like the late 1990s? Have we kind of disconnected from the fundamentals? And I think the answer is no, we haven't. And I kind of put this here in the top paragraph, what might be a recipe for a bull market? You would look at rising corporate profits, and that's going to be stoked by, moderate growth, not just at home, but around the world. We've got low interest rates, and that really just kind of adds to the mix in the sense it kind of spices up our recipe in the sense that you don't need to get into discounted cash flows, I think, with clients when you're like, lower interest rates mean, the present value of a future stream of cash flows is higher, and that present value is today's stock price. But low interest rates mean that there's less competition with stocks when it comes to other interest-bearing securities like money markets or corporate bonds. I'll talk a little bit about it more, but low inflation also adds to the mix. But you can point to the fundamentals of rising profits and rising and improving economic activity both at home and abroad, and that's lent up quite a bit of support to stocks this year. At the same time, I never try to time the market because I don't believe you can time the market. You're trying to predict the future based on unknown variables. But if you are a contrarian, you could maybe take this report and kind of turn it around and say, things really are in the sweet spot right now. I mean, the U.S. economy's growing. We're seeing better things overseas. And when you're in that sweet spot, can things really get any better? And if that is the case, that might be an argument to go ahead and maybe if you wanted to take maybe more of a cautious approach, you could look at today's reasonably strong fundamentals, which have been supporting stocks. Personally, on my side, conditions like these can last for quite a while, which would continue to lend, not that we can't have a correction, but could continue to lend support to equities going forward.
Okay, let's jump right into the talking points now. Starting with a look at the global markets, where it's pretty much growth across the board.
We are seeing, Doug, we're seeing confidence in the global economy that we really haven't seen since the last decade. And this is playing a big role in what's happening in the markets right now. I can jump right down to figure one. Taking a look at, fixed investment around the world. And I look at this because this has an impact on where the economies, global economies are going. And we're seeing an acceleration. When you look at what's happening and some of the major economies around the globe, you can see it in figure one. We're expanding right now. And it's not just we've seen an acceleration this year. There's that expectation it's going to continue into 2018. And this becomes important for U.S. investors because when you take a look at the S&P 500, over 40% of sales in S&P 500 companies come from overseas. And when you start to break that down, which FactSet has done, when you look at earnings growth, for companies that do more than half their business around the world versus those that do sales at home, you're seeing much better earnings growth with companies that do a majority of the business overseas. When you look at that, that may help explain some of the underperformance of the Russell 2000, where that tends to be more domestic. So you can't discount what's happening around the world because we are an interconnected market, and it's definitely providing, I think, an important tailwind to what we're seeing in the S&P 500 index right now.
Okay, and looking at U.S. markets, we've got a pretty good picture of third quarter earnings now. What are we seeing there?
Yep, for the most part, Doug, I mean, Q3 earnings season is winding up. We're still seeing a few of the major firms report, but with over 90% in, we've got S&P 500 profit growth at over 8% right now. I think this is very important because you go back earlier in the quarter, there seemed to be quite a bit of pessimism. I even note here, as late as October 23rd, and we were starting to see some companies begin to report about a week plus, really into the heart of earnings season. We had profit projected to rise under 4% at the time. And again, we're coming up in just over 8% right now. A lot of that has to do with a growing economy. Again, just not only here, but abroad. But you've got had some pretty big beats by some of the larger firms, which also has an impact on what's happening with the market cap by S&P 500. I think even more importantly, as we get past this quarter, you look at some of the analysis by Thomson Reuters, and you can see that we're expecting double-digit S&P 500 profit growth for coming up over the next four quarters. That lends support to stocks. But it isn't just earnings that we came from third quarter. If you take a look at some of the guidance, it's not nearly as conservative as what we were seeing just a few years ago. And when you've got positive guidance, it's not just that the firms beat earnings, but then they're coming out with this conservative outlook, which can limit gains. For the most part, we're seeing better guidance. Of course, that comes with risks because once loftier expectations get priced in, there's a lot less room for disappointment. And I put some of the data here that came from FactSet as far as companies that are beating earnings. The equity performance has been a little bit better, but below average. Firms that miss, they're being punished.
Okay, and next you take kind of a quick look at the role inflation is playing.
Inflation in equities definitely plays a key role, and we can jump right down to figure three, and you can see what happens to earnings multiples based upon a given rate of inflation. Now, I'd mentioned inflation up at the top of the show, and I know when you're talking with clients about inflation, you can get an array of responses. You know, when you think about it, what do markets look at? Markets look at the consumer price index, or the core PCI, or the PCE, which is a broad-based in a measure of inflation. It's what markets look at, it's what investors look at, it's what the Federal Reserve looks at. It may not be what your client looks at. Your client's looking at the check they're writing for for their kids' college tuition. They're looking at the cost of their health care costs. They're looking at how the cable bill goes up every year. But from a market perspective or an investor perspective, they're looking at things like the CPI. And right now, with inflation between if you look at the chart here, we're in a sweet spot for inflation between 0 and 2% when it comes to stocks. And that supports higher PE ratios, it supports higher multiples, and it helps, it supports the valuations that we're seeing today. Fed doesn't really like it. They would like to see a little more inflation. Of course, some firms lack pricing power. But as far as consumers and investors in diversified portfolios, we're right in that 0 to 2% inflation sweet spot right now.
Okay. And you title the next talking point, the sagging yield curve. Is this something to be concerned about? Because isn't the yield curve a bellwether for a recession?
It is. It exactly is. It is a great predictor of a recession when a yield curve flattens and inverts. And I wanted to bring this up because this is starting to get some financial press right now. So let's take a look. I mean, we jump down to figure four. You can see where we're at on the yield curve right now. We are positive. And I'm taking the 10-year treasury yield and subtracting out the three-month T-bill. Others sometimes look at the two-year treasury. But the end result is typically, when the yield curve flattens and goes negative, that's a harbinger of recession. We're not seeing that right now, Doug. And what's interesting, when you look at it, it's not as if the yield curve flattens and that's when the recession begins. It usually gives us some advanced warning. And with right now, using the current yield curve, we're around 100, maybe slightly more than 100 basis points positive. That's not, I'll go again, flattening from earlier stages in the recovery. I don't think it's really it's not really, it's not signaling a recession right now. And I try to point that out. If you look at the green line in that figure and some of the little, and kind of comparing when we hit the current level, a recession was usually at least a couple of years away. Another thing you've got to look at, I think the Fed is very aware about inverting the yield curve. And we've hit several rate hikes, although albeit at a gradual pace, it hasn't done much to move the 10-year treasury. So there is some concern if the Fed continues to tighten. We could see a flat yield curve sometime in early 2019, which would give us some pause later 2019 or 2020. I don't think the Federal Reserve will purposely invert the yield curve. If we keep low inflation, if inflation stays down, which has an impact on that 10-year treasury, it's likely that the Federal Reserve will slow its projected path of rate hikes. I don't think at this stage of the expansion, as long as it's been, that the Fed wants to go restrictive at this point. We would need to see much stronger economic growth before the Fed actually, we started seeing some real interest rates that were, you know, above zero, well above zero.
Okay. And next up, you've got kind of an overview of the tax reform bills that are being worked on in the House and the Senate. What's your take?
Well, it's interesting. This is also like the yield curve, but in another way, this is getting a lot of press right now. What's happening to tax reform? This is being recorded on Thursday. There is the expectation the House will vote on Thursday and likely pass its version of tax reform. The Senate's been working on it, its version. There's been a lot of talk, and I see this in the press, that there's some really big differences between these two bills, and can they be reconciled? I kind of take a different take. I have a different take on that. And I say it here, you know, they're not carbon copies of each other. But philosophically, Doug, I believe they're really quite similar. This isn't a situation where the House had its border adjustment tax, which we heard earlier in the year, and the Senate doesn't have a border adjustment tax. Or for that matter, maybe the House or the Senate, let's say the House has its version of tax reform, which is out on the table now. And then the Senate decides to go with, to junk the tax code and go with, say, a consumption tax or a value-added tax. I mean, something that's starkly different. Or we could even argue, if we just kind of tiptoe into the political arena, the House is controlled by Republicans, the Senate is controlled by Democrats, and then we see some real philosophical differences show up. And then compromise becomes much more difficult, especially, I think, in, you know, in today's poisonous atmosphere. So I think the key is it appears, we'll know tomorrow, but you know, or we'll know later today, the House can go ahead and they say they've got the votes, they'll pass theirs. Really comes to the point where, as if the GOP, with its razor-thin majority, can kind of keep its troops in line and pass its version. At that point, they go to committee, conference committee, and I believe the differences will be worked out. But the key becomes is, can Mitch McConnell round up at least 50 Republican senators to go ahead and pass its version of tax reform? If that doesn't happen, then things definitely, any kind of tax legislation definitely goes into doubt at that juncture.
It should be interesting. We shall see.
It should be interesting. And if it does, Doug, let me just say too that you would expect some type of sell-off in the market. There probably would be disappointment. It's difficult to quantify what we might see. I've heard the number 5% thrown about. But remember, you know, the longer term drivers of stocks, it's economic growth and corporate profits. And while we might get a sell-off or some type of correction, I think investors' focus would return back to earnings, would turn back to economic growth. So it's just something to keep in mind if tax reform goes the way of the so-called repeal in a place of Obamacare.
Okay. Yeah, that's important to keep in mind. Okay, well, let's move on to taking a look at what we can expect in the weeks ahead.
Well, what I wanted to look at too is there is a lot of optimism out there, but you know, risks never go away in the market, and there are always going to be some. I'm going to call these short-term risks, because the leading indicators right now just aren't pointing to a near-term recession. And let's remember that bear markets correlate closely with recessions. Simply put, when you have a recession, profit expectations fall sharply, and that creates a big sell-off in shares. But there's always, like I said, going to be risks out there. I'm not going to touch on every one of these, but I wanted to hit maybe in the beginning. We've seen a slight backup in yields in the high-yield bond market. We do a lot of this is being blamed right now on what's happening in telecom. But remember, too, high-yield bonds can be volatile. We can see funds flow in and out of the market. We saw a sell-off in bonds earlier in the year, and that didn't create much turbulence, really, if any, in the equity markets. We saw something that I was concerned about a couple of years ago. We saw a sharp backup in bond yields, complements of what was happening in energy, the oil price collapse, and, of course, energy junk bonds. And that itself didn't do enough to roil the credit markets and severely restrict credit and throw the economy into a recession. But it's something to keep an eye on. It's been quite a while since we've had a 10 or even a 5% correction. There just hasn't been that much volatility. And eventually we could see some catalyst eventually spark some kind of sell-off. And maybe this becomes now the time when maybe advisors can, you know, kind of tiptoe into the arena where they're begin to not, you don't want to sound alarmist, obviously, but go ahead and let clients know that, you know, corrections are part of the investment landscape. While things are going fine now, and when we eventually do see some volatility, you can always go back and point to those conversations that you've had, warning of the potential for some turbulence in the market. One of the most I think. You know, when you've got a disciplined investment approach, that has historically been the best path for longer term accumulation of wealth. But one of the advantages of a disciplined approach is to try to take that emotional component out of the portfolio or out of the investment equation. And when we do have these corrections, and corrections in the context of a growing economy are really healthy for stocks, medium and longer term, because they get rid of some of the optimism and the frothiness and the concerns there. But it doesn't mean that they're easy to go through. The 2-10% corrections we had in late 2015 and early 2016 are examples. So letting clients know now up front that, hey, you're monitoring and maybe expecting some volatility. When that eventually does occur, you can point to those conversations that you've had, and the goal being trying to remove that emotional component from the whole investment equation.
Yeah, that's a great point. Now really is the time to kind of get ahead of that.
Get a little bit ahead of that without creating that alarmism. Unless, of course, if you're very bearish, I've given kind of a contrarian argument that you could go ahead and use. But if you've got that longer term bullish prospect, bullish vision into the market, it is a good idea maybe to just try in a cautious way to get a little bit ahead of it.
Yeah, true. Okay, great. Charles, thank you so much for joining me today. Everyone, you have been listening to Charles Sherry, author of Horse's Mouth's Advisor Talking Points column. Now, Charles, if listeners are interested in finding out more about you and what you do, where can they go?
Well, they can go ahead and shoot me an email at charles@financialjumble.com, or go ahead and take a look at my website, financialjumble.com. The whole goal is really to put out content that kind of explains what's going on in a way that, in a conversational turn, that your clients are going to understand, and that kind of positions you as the leader and the thought leader in the field.
Wonderful. Great. Thanks for listening, everyone.